we kick things off by heading on out to Arizona to talk some Major League Baseball with Ted Berg of USA Today. Ted, how are you this afternoon?
Doing well, Rich. Thanks for having me on.
Oh, always great to talk with you. How are things in Arizona?
Hot, but good. It's nice out here.
Yeah, look, I'm looking out the window at several feet of snow still collected around here. So, hey, yeah, anything warm sounds good to me.
Yeah, I mean, it's actually been unseasonably warm here. We've hit like the mid-90s, and so it's sort of like being in an oven whenever you're outside. But, man, I mean, the baseball's great. It's a great atmosphere for baseball. All the teams are way closer together than they are in Florida. So, you know, from this perspective of covering it for a tourist trying to see as many teams as possible, it's really a great place to be. I love that.
A really wonderful piece on the Padres, Christian Betancourt, and what they're planning to do with him. Can you tell a little bit of that story? Because it's really fun.
Yeah, it's cool. You know, so the Padres are a team that obviously is entering 2017 with about as low expectations, I think, at least from the outside, as any baseball club could possibly have. But it provides them some room, I think, for trying out some new projects. And one of them is Christian Betancourt, who has been a major league catcher for several years. He's been a backup catcher. He hasn't hit much. He made a couple appearances as a mop-up pitcher, you know, when position players need to go in and blowouts last year. And when he did, he was thrown in the mid-90s, and he had a decent feel for a changeup, which is especially odd since that's usually the major league pitchers find last. And so the Padres and Court sort of decided that they should look into trying him out as a pitcher. And now he's been doing, I think, the bulk of his work this spring as a pitcher with the pitchers group. And on top of that has been maintaining his catching. So they're hoping to use him as a two-way player of sorts. Now, Andy Green's the manager. He said, you know, now he's not going to be the primary backup catcher, and he's not going to be a starting catcher, but he will be used in sort of a third catcher, pinch hitter, sixth outfielder type role if he makes the team's bullpen, and it does look like he might make the bullpen.
And the last guy to do this, as you point out, in recent memory, was Brooks Kieschnick, right?
Yeah, Brooks Kieschnick, and Kieschnick was mostly he started as a position player and moved into the bullpen, and then had a year where he DH'd four times and played left field three times. Outside of that, and to find a guy who was both a catcher, especially rare, just because catching is such a specialized field in baseball, so to do that, and I forget the guy's name, but he was a Red Sox player. In 1942 was the last guy to appear in at least three games in one season at both catcher and pitcher.
Well, it's a fun story, and I really enjoyed reading your piece on it. So who's going to be good this year? Let's start with what you've seen in Arizona. Who are the best teams that you've actually laid eyes on?
Well, the Dodgers are stacked. I'm here at Camelback Ranch now where the Dodgers play, and they're playing the Cubs. They're not exactly playing the Cubs regulars today. You know, I know they have that rule where you're supposed to send four guys. I think the Cubs might catch a fine for today's lineup or make a very good case that Tommy La Stella and Matt Caesar and Albert Amara are regular players for them. But the Dodgers and Cubs, I mean, that's pretty obvious, I would say. But those are the teams out here that just when you know, even just looking around the clubhouse and seeing all the names you recognize and all the guys you know are sort of in their primes or otherwise just great players, those are the obvious ones.
Who's the team this year that people have got the buzz going about that you think is perhaps most inclined to disappoint prognosticators?
Question, because I would... The club that, you know, quote-unquote won the offseason, it almost always seems like one team goes big all offseason, and then that team inevitably disappoints. I'm thinking about the 2012 Marlins when they brought in Jose Reyes and I forget who else, but, you know, several big contracts, and then they tanked. And then the Padres a couple years ago, who are now in the situation where they're having Christian Betancourt play both ways because of how all in they went for 2015 and how badly that failed the Diamondbacks last year. Whereas this year, I would say the Red Sox were kind of the team that won the offseason, but I would still expect the Red Sox to be very, very good this year. For teams that do have a lot of hype that might not live up to it, I'm not as in love with the San Francisco Giants as most people seem to be. Now, I haven't seen them, and it's a club that has obviously had a ton of success in recent years, and so hard to bet against them. But there's a lot of uncertainty in that lineup after, you know, guys like Buster Posey had a down year last year. Panic had a really rough year last year. Hunter Pence has gone from being, you know, one of the most durable players in baseball to a guy who has spent a lot of time on the DL the last couple of years. So for as good as the front part of that pitching staff is with Johnny Cueto and with Madison Bumgarner, I'm not sold on them as a team that can viably stay with the Dodgers all year.
So much young talent in the game, Ted, these days. So who are a couple of guys that are ready to make that big leap forward and have the breakout season?
Well, I feel like, Andrew Benintendi is obviously the guy everyone's talking about this year, and by all accounts, he's ready to be a very good major league player. I mean, you think you saw him be a major league player, a very good major league player for a couple months last year. It feels like the bulk of the great young players are sort of already here. Like, it's just an embarrassment of riches in terms of under 25 guys. I'm always shocked by how many guys sort of fly under the radar. In looking even just at shortstops, right? Like, there's the obvious cases. There's the Lindors and Correas and Bogarts of the world who get a lot of attention. But Trevor Story, for, you know, 97 games last year, was leading the majors in home runs before he got hurt. And not a guy that a lot of people talk about. A lot of guys on the Rockies, to be honest, that's kind of a team I feel like can surprise some people this year. But it's all over. You know, it seems like the developmental pipeline must have just gotten better in baseball, or maybe we're just in sort of a lucky wave of good players coming up and succeeding immediately, which used to not be the case. You know, I remember thinking and knowing even that, you know, a guy comes up at 22 or a guy comes up 21, that means, you know, he's there for the future, and you kind of have to live through the growing pain. Now it seems like guys come up, and at 21, 22, they're already some of the best in the game. Look at Mookie Betts, for example.
We're talking with Ted Berg of USA Today. I remember as a young guy going down to spring training in Florida when there would be just a handful of people in the stands, and it has changed so much in the last couple of decades. Is it big business for teams out in Arizona?
It is. It depends on the team. You know, the Cubs roll extremely deep. You go to their facility and you can't even find a parking spot. There are people tailgating just for the section of walkway that the Cubs take between their locker room and the field. The Royals still draw really well. I was at a Royals Indians game the other day in Goodyear that was packed. But then a couple days ago, I went and saw the Padres and Reds, and that was a more sparsely attended one.
Well, I have to ask you this, too, because you've done some scholarly research on this. Is it safe to say that baseball players are more likely to believe in ghosts than the average individual?
I think so. I don't know the percentage at which the average individual believes in ghosts, but just about, and I've been asking, I kind of scrapped it now because I wasn't getting really detailed answers from a lot of guys, but you know, there's a hotel in Milwaukee, the Pfister Hotel, and if you look it up, you will find maybe saying pretty explicitly, my room was haunted there. There was a ghost in my room. Late at night, I woke up and my stuff was moved across the room. And so I was kind of pursuing that, just trying to find stories about the Pfister Hotel. I didn't get many about that hotel specifically. But in the course of those conversations, I asked probably 12 guys if they believe in ghosts, so not a full sample, but only one of them said no, and that would be C.J. Cron, the Angels first baseman. Everyone else said they believe in ghosts. Rajay Davis said he believed in spirits, and that maybe that's slightly different than ghosts, and he explained that. But for the most part, it sounds like it's a fairly open-minded group when it comes to the paranormal. I think that, you know, baseball players are extremely superstitious in general, so maybe that plays into it, but I don't really know.
Well, they all watch Field of Dreams, too, so you got to buy it.
Of course, yeah.
Ted Berg, USA Today. Always love talking baseball with you, Ted. Thanks for making time for us this afternoon. Enjoy your time in Arizona, and we look forward to checking in throughout the season.
No problem, Rich. Thanks for having me.